Hey, y'all, and welcome to Inside Pop. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. We are continuing our celebration of Women's History Month with another segment counting down something in the world of pop culture about women.
Yes, we are going to discuss the music by some of our favorite divas, but with a twist. Music that defined us throughout the years, certain periods of our lives. We are going to get personal.
Sharing is caring. All that and the big sell right now on Inside Pop.
All right, so basically we wanted to try to do something every week for Women's History Month. And of course, to keep it pop culture themed. So when Sean and I were talking about doing this, we were like, well, let's just do our top three divas. And then, of course, we were just like, it's kind of basic. How can we take it to the next level? And I think you had the brilliant idea of getting really deep and talking about music that defined us in different periods of our lives.
Yeah, I figured that we would get a little personal. And I think when we both were chatting about this and the idea came up, there were a couple of female artists and music by those artists that immediately popped into our heads. So, and maybe it took us this while to feel, I know it took me this, we've been doing this podcast for a little over a year, and yeah, I'm ready to share a little bit of my personal experiences as well as my opinions, because Lord knows I've been sharing those for the past year and a half. But yeah, I'm ready to share how music has personally affected me in some ways. I'm excited to do that.
I'm excited to hear it. And I have been a little personal on here, but well, I think once we discuss some of our choices, maybe I'll be getting a little bit more personal.
Yeah, and I think I'd like to start off by saying, like, this isn't about being personal because I think the listeners desperately care to hear about my life. But I think what's always powerful for me when I listen to other podcasts is when I hear someone share a personal story and I'm able to relate to it in some way. I think it's very inspiring to me when people open up and share a bit of their personal lives. And it's always exciting when you hear someone who's not yourself, but who has similar experiences that you can relate to on some level. So I'm hoping that maybe we can do that for some of our listeners.
Agreed. So do you want to start with one of your first choices for a defining piece of music by a diva?
Defining divas. Sure, I'll start. So I want to go back. I think I'm going to go chronologically. So I'm going to go back to my college years. Okay. So the year is 1989, and I am a sophomore, junior in college. And I firmly believe that that is a time period when one should be slutting it up. Now, I do think that it's a time when, sure, you are young, you've come into yourself, you've come into your own, or you're coming into your own, and it's a time to date, it's a time to find out what people are good for you, what people you're attracted to, sow your wild oats, youngins. So for me, when I was in college at that age, I was not out of the closet. I had dated a couple of women, one woman in particular in high school, a girlfriend for 2 years, who was very special to me. But I stopped dating her. And so in college, I realized, listen, I'm not attracted to women. I'm not bisexual. I am gay. But I wasn't really ready to come out yet. I wasn't really ready to pursue relationships or like even ready to talk to friends about what I was feeling. So I kept it all inside, kept it suppressed. And it wasn't an easy time, Amita. It was hard.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I'll just say frankly, I was really horny. I mean, I was a 20-year-old boy. So yeah, it was scary. And I think any time, you know, whether it's 2017 or back in 1989, if you're not ready to come out, it's a frightening prospect to come out. So all that to say that pop culture played a big part in helping me through that. And for me, I would say in particular, Eurythmics released an album called Savage, and it's probably their strangest album, but I think their best album. The album is layered and complex and dark and kind of gothic and perfect for me, a big fan of the band, to listen to over and over and over again. And somehow Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart felt like they were channeling all of my anguish, my fear, my anger, my sexual drive that felt kind of twisted and subverted into 9 or 10 brilliant songs that all seemed to be written about what I was experiencing. So that album, when I think about that album, it feels defining. It definitely makes me think of that period of time in my life. So Eurythmic Savage is my first entry into this discussion.
This almost kind of is like a big sell in its own right, because I don't know this album. I'm like, I now need to listen to this to get a piece of you from that time.
Yeah. It's an acquired taste, because Eurythmics, without a doubt, have created some really catchy pop singles that everyone should love. You know, Would I Lie to You, Sisters Are Doing It for Themselves,
yes.
You know, Missionary Man. But this album didn't really have any hit singles, and it was weird. It was kind of experimental. There's a song called I Love to Listen to Beethoven, which is just kind of weird rhythms and Annie's voice sampled, and there's really no melody, but it's an amazing song, and they made it their first single. So lots of weirdness, but I just give them credit for being, you know, they were kind of at the top of their game. They had just released Revenge previously, which had Missionary Man and a couple of other big singles. And then they went kind of weird and dark. And I think that also spoke to me. They weren't being mainstream, right? They were being a little alternative. They were being odd. Annie Lennox created a character for this album. So every single music video that they did, and they did a music video for every song on the album. So, you know, as much as I love Beyonce, she's not the first person to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And she created this character who was like, basically she was playing a woman playing a drag queen.
Wow.
On this album. I'm going to post I'll post a video on our show notes. So it was as strange as they got. And it was exciting to me because it was just the subtle reminder that strange can be good. Freaky can be great. And, you know, not to read too much into it, but it definitely felt vicarious and it gave me a little bit of hope. And so I love them. I loved them even more during that period.
I love
it. Yeah. So, and you know what? When I listen to it now, I don't feel sad. I still love that album so much. And I listen to it and I just think, oh, whew, you've come a long way, baby. It's good. but I just love the album. I think it's brilliant and weird. And yeah, I painted it kind of a bleak picture, but I don't feel sad listening to it. It makes me kind of happy. Yeah. So that's me rambling on, as you know I can do, about Eurythmics. But oh, that voice and the style of her and the creativity of the images she creates. She's everything, Annie.
Oh,
yeah.
I love Annie Lennox.
So that's me. What about you? What's your first entry into the diva that has a diva and her work that has divined a period of time in your life?
You know, first of all, thank you for being so open and willing to share that personal story about this album defining you.
Thank you.
You're setting the bar high. I think I'm going to do the same thing and just go chronological for what my first choice is. Mine is actually a song from one of my favorite divas, and I know she's not one of your favorites, but she is definitely a defining diva in my life, and that is Mariah Carey. And if anybody knows me well knows that I have loved her music for a very, very long time. And her first few albums were really what I think I clung to in the early and mid-90s, because she had obviously such an incredible voice and I sang a lot. And so I just continuously sang her music. And on her album Daydream, there was a track called Looking In. And it was the last track on the album. And it was this very slow, melancholy track. And I don't have the best memories of my teenage life, mm-hmm. but I think it was one of the first songs that I sang and I cried when I sang it.
Wow.
And I'm not a singer, you know, I sing and I know I can sing well, but I think that for me to feel emotion from singing something isn't easy. And for this song to do that meant that something was in this song that I connected to. And some of the lyrics, I think at Mariah's period of life and career, I think the lyrics were speaking to her being in the spotlight and with Tommy Mottola and her record label. And it spoke to, you know, you see somebody and you think I'm in a golden world, but that's not all there is to see. You're never going to know the real me. And I think it spoke to me because at that time in my life, I was in high school and I was kind of an ugly duckling. And I think that I had immense insecurity as a teenager, as most do. And I think that's where I kind of lived those lyrics in my own way. And even to this day, the song will always get me choked up. It really does. So that is my personal song.
I would, this is pseudo Big Cells because and I should say that. And it's nice to hear you speak about how meaningful Mariah's music is to you, because let's not forget that when Mariah came out, and I would say for the first decade of her career, there was nothing laughable about Mariah Carey, an amazing voice that really did touch 100%. People in different ways, right? I mean, it is sad now because she was in a reality show and mm-hmm. that New Year's Eve fiasco, and there are many things that could be comical about her, who she is, but I mean, it's important for those who are on the younger side listening to us. It makes complete sense that Amita was so touched and comforted and moved by this woman singing a particular song.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Yeah, yeah. I think if anybody thinks that Mariah is some spoiled, rich diva, I would go back to the albums of Daydream and Emotions and get to know her as a singer and a songwriter. I mean, she wrote a lot of these songs. You know, people don't really give her credit for that. They just think that she's this woman with a powerful voice. But she is a talented songwriter. And this was one of my favorite, but pretty sad songs of hers.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely listen to that. I'll brace myself when I listen to that. But she's moving. I do love some of her music, and when I think about Mariah, I do think about that era of Mariah, and it's mm-hmm. pretty remarkable.
I mean, I think that's my favorite era. I was just listening to this album again, and I was just in love with it again, and texting two of our mutual friends who are huge Mariah fans about it and how much I loved this album. So yeah, but this is one of the biggest parts of why I loved it.
Now, tell me what year that is. Do you recall?
The album came out in 1995, I believe. So I was about to be a senior in high school. And now you all know my age.
All right. Well, my next choice is from that era. It came out a few years later.
Hmm.
And I'm going to bring up the mood, at least on my part, because I know I was a little serious with my first entry. But my next album that defines a period of my life is Gifted to Us by Ms. Lauryn Hill.
Yo, can I just tell you that that was right next to being on my list? Like, it was almost on my list.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, that's so funny. That's so, so funny.
When I think of, someone would ask me, Sean, one word to describe The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, my first word would be joy. Joy, 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 joy. I yes. think about that album and I think about the time of my life. Joy and being carefree and being, I cannot say carefree enough because, again, for you youngins, when one gets a little bit older, I know I said this was going to be uplifting, but I'll just say this. When one gets older, there are things that happen to you, to loved ones, to family, that doesn't allow you to be as, no matter what your positive attitude is, there are things that just happen as you get older that do not allow you to be as carefree as you had been when you were younger. Fact. So for me, when I think about the late 90s and my carefree 20s, late 20s, I think about this album. Miseducation of Lauryn Hill came out, and the thing that I most remember about this album and this time period, it blew my mind and hit me in such a personal way. Every single house party I went to, every store I walked into, every conversation I got into with coworkers or friends was about this album. This album was everywhere. It was omnipresent. No one got sick of it. And so it was this really personal thing, but completely communal. Everybody was floored and lifted up by this incredible album.
Raising my hand, I was Amen. Definitely one of them. It's funny you said it was joy. I was like, it isn't just love.
And that's what I do not listen to. Those interstitials.
Those interludes are my favorite.
They were, when I first heard it, don't need them anymore. I just need the songs.
Oh, I love them. Oh my gosh, I love them so much. It's so funny. I really was going to put this on my list and I decided to switch it out with something else. But I love this album. My gosh, I was in X Factor the other day and, oh my gosh, the duet with Mary J. I used to love him.
Every single song on this album is a gem. Then there's the duet with D'Angelo, you know, and then there's all of the great solo songs.
Yeah.
Zion is one of the great songs ever written about motherhood. It's just a perfect album, and, you know, there are random facts. Trivia, John Legend plays piano on this album. I think he was still at UPenn and somehow got connected, and yeah, so John Legend has some piano credits on this album. I don't know, you know, I could go on about this album, but I will say that for me then, so very personally, it's personal and then public because it's just an album. I think that defines the era for a lot of people in different ways. And then I saw her on tour and the tour was incredible. It felt old school and modern at the same time. It's just great. Lauryn Hill, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, Joy in 1998 for Sean. He wasn't Sean David Johnson then. He was just Sean Johnson.
Aww.
He was just simple. Sean Johnson.
You know, it's funny because this was, like I said, I was going to consider this on my list. But part of me is considered this on my list because I loved it just as much as you did. I think back then I was in college and I just loved her sound. But these songs mean something different to me now. You know, like X Factor means something totally different to me now than when I listened to this album originally. And that's amazing. It's amazing that this album can really just transcend time like that and give me something different upon listening to it at an older age.
That's a mark of great music.
Yeah, I think this would be a Desert Island album for me. Definitely one of my Desert Island albums.
Oh, that's a good one. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Because it also has such a range of musical styles that,
yes,
you know, doo-wop that thing.
Yes.
And then
Forgive Him Father.
Forgive Him Father, yeah. Her rapping was on point. Her voice was beautiful.
Lost Ones, yes.
Right on.
Let's just keep talking about this album.
Yeah, really. Let's name every single song and say that was great.
And that
was really great. Yeah. So I think that's it really is phenomenal, seminal work of art. And I'll end this by saying that I am sad that she didn't follow up with something, with another great work. I think that a lot of people are looking at her MTV Unplugged album with fresh eyes. I remember at that time, no one wanted it, but I think a lot of people are appreciating it now, you know. And like, what I'll say is that sometimes people only have one great novel in them or one great album. And if that's the case, if this is the only full-fledged studio album Lauryn Hill ever gives us, she's given us enough.
I agree. Yeah, she's on tour still, actually. My cousin just saw her a few weeks ago at Radio City and said she still's got it. So
great. That's good to hear.
She was very happy with it.
Good. Glad she showed up. So what is your next entry?
My next entry is an entry that I know that you would share much love for, and it is Mary J. Blige's The London Sessions.
Yes.
This album has so many different meanings to me, but I think the biggest one is because it came at a time that I was going through something very difficult, and it was the end of my marriage. We're getting personal. So, yes. This album came out around the same time that I was getting divorced, and it was, as one of the songs said, it was therapy. It was necessary because I could feel, I mean, with Mary in it, all of her music, you feel her pain so many times in so many different albums. But with this one, the sound was different and the music was incredible, and songs like Therapy and A Whole Damn Year. I mean, A Whole Damn Year defined me in so many ways, and that definitely got me choked up. And in a weird way, it's also really special to me because I think it connected us in a much different way than I ever thought it would.
Interesting. Elaborate.
We really bonded over this album.
Yeah.
And then we went to see the documentary for it and saw her in concert together with that documentary. So I think that the two of us kind of were just like, I don't know. It was just amazing. And I think that was maybe the precursor to us really getting to a great friendship based in so much more than just we work together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think it might have been what led to this podcast, frankly.
That is historic. And I totally get what you're saying. I feel, yeah. I think it's really powerful. We both love pop culture so much. And I remember it felt really powerful that we both connected to this album in a really strong way, on an objective level of this is really good music, but then also on another level of we were both going through stuff that the album spoke to.
Yeah.
Yeah, in different ways. And yeah, we were sharing stuff about our individual personal challenges with each other, stuff that you don't share with any regular coworkers. And so, yeah, it felt really special. I'm going to, if you will allow me, share that album with you, because the more you talk and I listen to you, I definitely get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what's interesting to me as I hear you speak? The album was a big experiment and departure and change for her. Mm. So, you know, she went to London. She didn't work with the regular people. She was out of her element. And for that to be an album also, the product of that spoke to you during your process of change and transformation.
Yeah. 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 I guess that's that's true. Yeah. So, Mary, shout out to Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Thanks so much.
She's going through it again, but, you know, That's also, yeah, let's talk about women for a second. I mean, I think that's something when I think about the music that hits me personally, it is female singers, whether they're singing their own songs or singing the music of others. It's, I think, the emotion of women, how in touch women can be with their feelings. That's, I think, what women seem to do so much better at is convey emotion and help you feel emotion, and it feels vicarious and healing. Mm-hmm. I experience that with female singers way more than I experience it with male singers.
Yeah. No, agreed. I mean, I am a woman, so I think I'm going to connect to female singers mm-hmm. already and on a different level than a male singer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's not a time that a female singer and I will just be, I see you, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. just be in it. And that's a testament to some really raw, emotional, like kind of laying it all out there by some incredible artists.
Amen.
All right, well, what's the last defining diva?
You've got me feeling emotion right now, Amina.
Oh,
deeper than I ever have before on this podcast. See, I told you I like Mariah.
You do. No, you do. Okay.
Okay, my last one is very recent and makes me think of you and this podcast. Look what's happening here. It's a dialogue. It's a back and forth. Oh my gosh. Listeners, I hope listeners enjoy how much we enjoy each other. Because Amina and I enjoy each other so much.
People are going to get tired of us enjoying each other.
It's a love fest. Well, that's why we do the podcast together.
It is. It is.
Yes. Okay, so my last entry is just one song. I think it's one of the great songs written and recorded and released in 2016. And I'm going to say, in the 21st century, so the 17 years that we've been here, it's one of the great songs. Cranes in the Sky, Solange. I know the song is fresh, and you should allow songs to stand the test of time before you put them on that type of pedestal, but I know deep in my heart that I will love Cranes in the Sky more, deeper than I do now, 5 years from now. So I'll tell you how it defines this recent period of my life. Cranes in the Sky is essentially Solange singing about how she has at times felt dissatisfied, confused, right? I tried to do this to make things better. I tried mm-hmm. to dance it away, drink it away. I tried to spend money. All these attempts to find happiness, nothing was working. So the song is, I mean, it's not like you could actually read the song in one way and think, oh, the song is that about depression. Like no matter what you do, you can't be happy. And that is one way to interpret it. But I do think of this song as what life is about. I don't want to overspeak this, but yeah, like to find meaning in life, to achieve certain things and realize I'm not happy, to have these challenges thrown at you and continue to persevere, continue to try things to make you happy. So ultimately to me, Cranes in the Sky is completely uplifting and beautiful. And I feel like there's some hope at the end of the song, just the way with her voice kind of floats up and up and up. And so it makes me think of 2016 and, you know, the previous year, because, you know, again, went through some trying personal times with deaths in my family of family members very close to me, other personal challenging things. And then, like, there's always the existential crises, right? Like, am I happy in my job? Should I be doing more? Why haven't I won an Oscar yet? Like that kind of stuff as well. But I just feel like in this, what is it, Amina, 3.5 minute song, she just touches on all of that and says, like, keep trying, keep searching, because mm-hmm. there's something that's deep and resonant that's within your grasp that is going to help you achieve some level of satisfaction.
Yeah. Oh, I love this choice. I love, love, love that you chose this. This is such a beautiful song. I think I was reading, I think it was the interview that she did where Beyonce interviewed her. Did you read that?
No, I need that in my life.
I should have big sold you that. It was on my list too, actually.
Okay.
And she said the cranes in the sky was something, basically because she was in Miami and she was looking out the window and there was all these cranes because there was so much construction.
Yeah.
And they were, those are the cranes in the sky. And it was almost like, oh, really? I thought it was so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was almost like a little, this is what I saw. But then she took, but then I also was just like, that's so interesting that something like that, that what you saw triggered this emotional roller coaster of a song and got you to this place. And that was the genius of that song to me.
Yeah, there's a great Song Exploder podcast where she's interviewed and she talks about the song and they break down the song and you can just hear like various instrumental tracks. So she talks about how she got the beat from Pharrell and where she recorded the vocals. It's really fascinating. You should definitely check that out.
And you've told me to, and I need to.
It's so good. You'll love it. I promise you.
Oh no, I will.
And yeah, and basically she, you know, went down to Miami and where she does a lot of writing. It's not a party town for her. It's a place where for some reason she actually writes a lot of her music. And but all that construction and those ugly cranes in the sky. I'll say this, Amita and I, I'm not going to talk about what we're doing, but Amita and I are actually working together again professionally. And that's as much as you get. But where we work, if one walks to that office, there is so much construction going on in this section of Manhattan. I am often humming or sometimes singing out loud to myself, Cranes in the Sky, because I don't want to feel those metal clouds.
No, definitely not.
But of course, it also makes me think of you because we both love this song so much. And I was so excited and so happy that you love the song as much as I do. And it makes me think about our podcast, right? In 2016, I'll always think about our podcast connected to Cranes in the Sky. So very defining for this period of my life.
I'm laughing because when you started saying that this song defined our podcast and it was one of the most defining songs of 2016, I thought of something else. And I think this album defined this podcast, which is Lemonade.
Love it. The Knoll sisters rule our lives.
And this was my last choice. Was
love it.
Lemonade. Because so there doesn't go a day or a podcast or a minute that we don't quote something from this iconic album by Beyonce.
Yes.
So my final choice was Beyonce's Lemonade. And not just because it brings both of us happiness in some ways and we both love this album and we're just floored by it and continue to reference Daddy Lessons, aka that's the ringtone on my phone, or I say Slay, like the shirt that I bought when I saw her in concert, or, you know, Formation when I set an alarm to wake me up. So yes, this album meant a lot to me. I loved it from beginning to end and in reverse if I could. But it also was exactly what I needed at the time, post-divorce.
Yes.
To feel empowered, to feel just take me to another level of being a woman and feeling finally confident in the life that I'm living now. Mm-hmm. There were so many tracks on this album that kind of just gave me that life. It gave me life. I don't know how to say it. You know what I mean? But like There's just, and some of it brought back some pain, but it was also a cathartic pain. Like I got through it because of what she sang. And so, sorry, I ain't sorry. You know what I mean? Like, boy, bye. Like, yeah, good. Bye. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, those are the things that, like, they were just kind of like touchstones that just kind of connected with me in this album. And then songs like, you know, All Night Long, that was, it was beautiful and a little bit heartbreaking, that song. So, so yeah, Lemonade was in so many different ways a defining album.
You speak the truth.
Thanks.
It, yeah, it's thank you, Beyonce, for giving Amita Patel that album at that time. But isn't it great? Like, it feels like she did make it for you. And the rest of us were just along for the ride.
No, I think she made it for so many other reasons. I just think that, and I think we've discussed it. Like, I mean, and it's been said so many times, even Adele said it, the way you make women feel, but specifically Black women, was unique to this particular album. I am not a Black woman, so I don't think I have that inherent connection in that way. But I am a woman, and I went through things, and she figured out a way for me to feel those things.
Love that. So true.
Thanks, Bae.
Thank you, Bae. The Knowles sisters are ruling our lives now. So that as it should be.
2017.
Right. Well, I loved this amazing conversation. I felt pretty comfortable opening up, sharing some personal stuff, hearing you share some personal stuff. And of course, as it connects to pop culture. And I'm just proud of how much pop culture means to both of us, right? It's not shallow. Some people are like, oh, pop culture, how fluffy. But when pop culture helps you through hard times and helps you make sense of challenging things, it's what's more important than that? What's more beautiful and artful than that?
I agree. And I think the only real reason that I think the two of us could do this is because we were both here doing it together. So
yes.
Thank you.
I appreciate you.
Oh, I appreciate you.
You'll be yes, my defining divas, Annie, Solange, Lauren, and Amita.
Oh my God. You're gonna make me cry again.
Oh my gosh. No more tears. let's quote Mary again. Not gonna cry. All right. Well, we hope you guys enjoyed this as well. Please tweet us and let us know if you guys are in the sharing mood. Let us know what songs or albums have defined periods of your life. We'd love to hear about it. Tweet us. Let us know.
Yeah. Shoot us a message at Pop Insiders on Twitter and let us know what albums or songs defined your life and why. Get personal with us.
All right. Shall we move on to the big sell?
Yes.
Well, we all know that the big sell is the segment in which Amita and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture to the other. So last time, I big sold an Amazon series called Fleabag to Amita, a show about a single British woman having personal challenges. What's that's it. I was like, how do I describe the show in one sentence? That's it. So
that's a tough one. Yes.
So Amita, what did you expect to think, and what did you think of Fleabag?
You know what's funny is that you sold me this like over a week and a few days ago, and I forgot some of what you described. Aside from the fact that she breaks the fourth wall, I forgot some of the plot lines that you had kind of described to me. So it was interesting watching it. The fourth wall thing, as you had said, was a little difficult at first. But I watched the first three episodes. And so I think by the third episode, it kind of slowed down a little. Like it definitely was minimized. And therefore, it was a little bit more kind of easier to consume. Mm-hmm. I like it. I'm not going to say I don't like it. I do like it. There are some really interesting kind of themes in this that I definitely connect to as a woman and as a single woman. So I think it's funny. I think it's self-deprecating. I think it's interesting, this journey that she's on and everything that she's been dealing with and the way that they kind of have peeled back layers throughout at least the first three episodes that I've watched.
That layer peeling continues. And I think there are only six episodes.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to finish it just because they're short and there's three more left. Mm-hmm. I can't say for sure I think it's hilarious, though. Like, that there's moments. There's definitely moments that I did think were really funny. I can't think of gerbils.
Wait, do you mean guinea pigs? Oh, no, guinea gerbils. Pigs.
No, wait, maybe it is a guinea pig.
Yeah, no, guinea pigs.
Okay, guinea pigs. Guinea pigs, forgive me.
Don't think about gerbils. So, so what is your rating? What do you give Fleabag?
I'm going to give it a solid 3 stars.
Okay, so you're coming back for more. With caution.
With caution.
Right. All right, I hear you. Yeah, I was, you know, I wasn't sure because not that you don't or can't enjoy cynical things, because I know you do like some cynical programming, but yeah, I wasn't sure. I was rolling the dice with this one.
Yeah.
Just taking chances.
And that's what we need to do.
And it's blown up in my face. So
no, there... 3 is a good rating.
Okay, it is. It is. So what do you have to big sell to me this week?
Sorry, I did something just made me laugh about Fleabag. So I guess it's valid. It's a good show. Just that dude from the bus and his teeth.
Ooh. Oh. Okay, sorry. More of him to come. That's all I'm going to say.
Why? I was like, you know, the one thing that I connected to is like, I really hope I'm never that girl on the bus. So my big sell this week is yet again not sponsored by Spotify, but we should be, something that I found on my New Music Friday playlist, which I sometimes dive into, and this past week I did, and I found this artist named, I hope I'm saying this right, Georgia Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of her?
I have not.
Yes. I always love that you don't hear things sometimes because you're just so knowledgeable.
I can't help it.
So Georgia Smith, there is this song that she sang that was just released last week. And I think one of my favorite things about the segment and just this podcast that we do is that we love pop culture, so we're always just trying to consume it. But then because I want to talk to you about something in pop culture, and then I want to talk to all the people who are listening to us about it, I kind of like dive deeper and I like do some research and I find articles and I want to read more about them so I can kind of give some more tangible information than just, ah, she's a great singer with a great song. So I did a little research on this lovely young British woman named Georgia Smith, and an article from Fader came up, and the headline of the article is what got me, and it says, "Meet Georgia Smith, the British teen conquering apathy with soul." And yeah, so I read the article and then I kind of dive deeper into some of the more songs that she had. She doesn't have that many. What I think is most intriguing is that she does not want to sign with a label. She's just putting stuff out, and there's some really interesting choices in what she's put out. And I thought that I could give you a couple of her songs, and I would love to make sure that you also read this article about her as well from Fader, because I thought it was just a really interesting article about her and her music and what she's about.
I love it. A multidisciplinary big sell. It's reading and listening. I'm up for it.
Yay. Great.
Bring it.
So the songs that I think, the one song that got me into her is Beautiful Little Fools. And then she had a couple other singles that are on Spotify, and then an EP, which was not readily available to find on Spotify, but then I found it and then made me love it even more because it's my favorite number and it's called Project 11. So I think that maybe the best thing for you to do is just listen to Beautiful Little Fools. And then another song called Where Did I Go? And another one called Sirens. Those three songs, I think, are a great kind of repertoire to get a feel for her. They're all a little bit different. And I think you'll like her.
Great. Looking forward to that. And then we'll share the article in our show notes. So you yes. guys can go to insidepoppodcast.com and you'll find that article. And we'll all read it together.
Yay. Book club.
Well, everyone, this is the time when we'd just say goodbye quickly. But we have a special tease for you.
Oh, jeez. Next
week, we are going to begin our version of March Madness. We're going to have a bracket. It has nothing to do with basketball, or does it? It has nothing to do with basketball. So it's a women's themed bracket. Essentially, we all have heard about Amita's husbands. Those are the men in pop culture who have become worthy of being Amita's object of affection. So we are going to take 8 of her potential husbands and do a bracket. Because you know how I like making Amita, like, not making, but I enjoy talking to Amita and maybe convincing her to, like, make a final decision, a final choice on something.
Loves to put me on the spot.
Why? Because I'm evil. So we are going to do a bracket where together we pit Amita's husbands together and we come up with the ultimate celebrity husband for Amita Patel. Amita, would you care to share who are the 8 husbands competing in our bracket next week?
Okay. FYI, if you can't tell, I'm blushing. And if you can't tell, this is all Sean's idea.
It is. I'm so excited.
All right. So here are the husbands in no particular order, although the first one is kind of the OG of the group, Matt Damon. If anybody knows me, knows that I have loved Matt Damon for a very long time. So Matt Damon, Idris Elba, Andre Holland, Riz Ahmed, Jake Gyllenhaal, Oscar Isaac, Michael B. Jordan, and Miguel.
There are some hotties on that list.
They're all hotties. Excuse me.
Which one? Who's Amita's ultimate husband? We're gonna get to that. So next week we're gonna begin our bracket, and we will end the episode. We'll take those 8, kill off 4, and get down to her top 4 husbands. And then in the final week of March, we are going to choose Amita's ultimate husband. This is going to be amazing. I don't think you need anything else in next week's episode. This is all you need to hear. But we will have other stuff we're talking about.
Please don't kill any of my husbands, okay?
Not kill, but eliminate. Elimination. Fine. Round. All right, this is going to be great. If you want to help sway Amita, you know, the one thing we haven't said, Amita, I'm so excited about this. I'm giddy.
You're so good.
I'm creating the bracket. This is the only time I've ever cared about a bracket. I am creating the bracket. So will I pit in the first round, you know, Matt Damon versus Oscar Isaac? I might do that. And then what will Amita choose? So this is going to be amazing. And why is this part of Women's History Month? Because for so long, men have objectified women. We are objectifying these dudes. Feminism.
Well, I can objectify them all day.
So can't wait for that. And of course, if there are any other stories that are equally as important as this one, we will cover them in next week's Inside Pop.
There will be stories that are just as important and more important than the future husbands of my life, okay?
Probably. Until then, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Pop Insiders, and visit us on iTunes, where you can leave a quick rating and review, and just find us by searching Inside Pop.
And don't forget to head over to our website. You can subscribe to the podcast, leave comments, and visit old podcasts of ours, and read our show notes, of course. It's chock full of information.
Until then, have an amazing week, and we'll see you next time on Inside Pop.
Bye, y'all.